Plugged In is a show that helps to build and inspire our youth. The show highlights and finds solutions to difficulties that teens and young adults face today. We will open the eyes of our youth and show them that the world is waiting for them to explore. Make sure that you are plugged in as we work together to find solutions to empower ourselves. The error of youth is to believe that intelligence is a substitute for experience, while the error of age is to believe experience is a substitute for intelligence. Ernest Hemingway quotes, get plugged in with Chelsea Francois. Hi, everyone. I'm Chelsea Francois, and today is the first official podcast for Plugged In, and it's an interview with Dr. Bruce Strobel, Jr. Dr. Strobel, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Excited to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Okay, so of course, I wanted to go over current events and relevant events that recently happened that kind of shook our country, I feel, but especially African Americans. And it's the police-caused killings of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile. And I wanted to speak about this because I know your campaign is People Over Politics 2016. And
yes, ma'am.
Preventing police and civilian conflicts. And I just wanted you to speak on how you felt about those shootings and your People Over Politics 2016.
Okay. Well, just, you know, like any other person who's a normal person in America who has, I guess you say, emotions and feelings, when I saw both videos, like the many videos I've seen in my time, I was appalled, I was very disturbed, and I was hurt that it would continue on. After everything that would happen, after the Trayvon Martin situation, after the situation in Jacksonville, after everything, you know, this is police brutality and violence against black people has been an ongoing issue throughout my life, as far back as I can remember. I always tell people that Rodney King was my childhood assistant baseball coach. His nephews played on the team with me when I was a young child. And, you know, we could always see how he was affected the way he was affected by the trauma he experienced and the way his family was affected. So I can only imagine how other people were impacted and the other families of all the people who've been victims of police brutality and police aggression. So I was very disturbed. And immediately I was talking to some of my colleagues, and we started to talk about how every time this happens, the community is looking for a response. Everybody starts saying, what are we going to do? And what we all agreed on was it's too late. We should have already done something to prevent this from happening or to have our response automatically prepared. We should have something in place. So we start to look at what are we going to do going forward to put measures in place so that if this happens again, we can get justice. I don't believe you can eliminate crime and wrongdoing from happening, but you can put in a system where justice could be exacted in the most optimal way possible. So People Over Politics, I want to talk about that now. That is my campaign slogan. And basically what that means is that we approach political situations, and we approach public service. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, I'm sorry. We approach public service from the orientation that the interests of the people are primary. What often happens is politicians get bogged down in ideology. They say, I'm a Republican, or I'm a Democrat, or I'm a conservative, or I'm a liberal. So I'm going to use a conservative approach to solve this problem. Even if conservative approaches have shown no ability to solve the problem, even if your liberal ideology has shown only to worsen the problem. And people still will, based on their orientation, they will try to solve the problem without being objective. So People Over Politics is a call for objectivity and problem solving for our social issues. It's saying let's not go with our political orientations. Let's go with what research shows us will provide the best solution. And that is what I'm trying to offer to the city of Tallahassee, and I'm advocating for, and it's resonating very well with people. I go out, I meet Democrats, Republicans, and they say, well, what's your political affiliation? And right away I say, I'm non-party affiliated. I'm not a politician. I'm a problem solver. And that's why I'm running for office. There's problems here in Tallahassee that I feel could be addressed if we take a people over politics approach. So some of the problems, we have food insecurity issues, we have high poverty, and we have unequal development. So what I've been calling for to address all our issues is I think that it would start with developing equitably across the city of Tallahassee, and that simply means increasing access and opportunity for all people and not just people in certain communities or certain segments of our or certain sectors of our city.
Right, Mike. I completely agree with just about everything, and I think your campaign slogan is great. And I don't know if it's because I'm 17, I might be just a little too young, but Trayvon Martin was the first time I realized that there's actually, you know, people getting killed for no reason. And I was watching a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air episode, and on the show it was one of Prince's friends, Uncle Phil, told his friend to put his hand down. And then he was like, no, because there's a police officer right here. I'm going to have 6 warning shots in my back. And then that's when I realized that this was an issue that's been going on, but now it's just now that it matters to me. And then I realized that maybe if it mattered to everyone at a certain point, which I think this is the first time that these shootings were back-to-back and they were very close. So there was a lot of feedback that I saw, and it was, like, very evident that people cared. And then when you said that it might have been too late, and then that, like, the first thought was too late. I don't think it's ever too late, because there might be another Tamir Rice here in Tallahassee, you know, in the park, and we don't want, you know, for it to come so close to home that it's Tallahassee where we're mourning the death of someone for no reason. You know,
I definitely agree with you. Let me clarify very quickly. When I say it's too late, I mean it was too late for those, for Alton Sterling and Philando and the other 4 men who died that weekend and the police shooting in Dallas. We were too late on mitigating that issue because we hadn't put anything in place. Because we're responding. We're being reactive instead of proactive as a community, as an American people. That is a consistent problem we're struggling with.
I agree. And you also spoke about unequal development, and that reminded me of a video I saw. It was Paul Collier, and he was speaking about the hypothetical bottom billion. And he was speaking about how if we were just to help the people that weren't as fortunate as us and to just give them time to catch up, basically, that we can probably all be able to succeed together. And I was also watching another video, and it was about why some countries are rich and others are poor, and that can also be used in America, like why some of us have and some of us don't, like why do some people have too much food and some people go to sleep hungry, and just things like that that I feel like can be incorporated in everyday teaching.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, some people still subscribe to the social Darwinist approach. That means all, you know, it's survival of the fittest. But what we know is that that's not necessarily true. When we look through history, when we look at our social sciences, what we see is that we have systems in place that allow some people to maintain privilege and advance their wealth. And it makes burdens and obstacles for other people routine. So it's not so much survival of the fittest. We have a system that is unfair, and it's been structured that way historically. And over time, what happened was that if you look at history, it was a time they knew the system was unfair. They purposely structured it that way, and they made it clear. But over time, we became used to it. So people just think that's the way it is, and that's the way things are supposed to be. So they say, you know, like, why would we help the poor? It's their fault that they're poor. It's black people's fault that the police address them the way they are, because people will say, you know, they think black people are more prone to violence. So they say, well, we have to address them that way. These are stereotypes that are reinforced that both black people start to believe about themselves and the white community and other communities around the world start to believe about black people. And the same thing happens to Latinos, and the same thing happens to poor people. And then also we start to get the same kind of issues between men and women. people start to look at women a certain way based off of historical stereotypes, and those start to become normalized, and people start to see the world through this corrupted, patriarchal, racist, classist lens, and those are the people who get into power, and they consolidate power to keep it amongst themselves and exclude the rest of us from the decision-making process. So that's what I'm fighting against here in Tallahassee, Florida.
And that reminds me of, well, you had two posts that I saw that was kind of interesting, where it was my thoughts on how Tallahassee can learn from recent tragedies, and also the post of violent crimes as a public health issue. And then you said that harsh criticism from that. And I just wanted you to elaborate on that.
You know, I first wrote it in the – I wrote an opinion editorial in the Tallahassee Democrat, and that's where I – I announced it. You know, I said, this is a public health issue we're facing. And that simply means that this isn't something that's just happening. There's causal factors. Like, if you have certain factors in play, then we could predict you're going to have a higher crime rate. So that's what I was alluding to. But there are people who kind of look down on me because I'm educated. So they think that I'm disconnected and I'm only looking at numbers. And I'm saying, no, I actually get out and talk to people. But on the side of that, I also do the research. So a lot of people were saying, oh, this guy, he's an idiot, or this person has no idea what's going on, or this person is just trying to justify crime and things of that nature. So I got a lot of criticism from that, particularly, you know, if you ever post something and you see the comment section, you know, it could get really ugly down there because people aren't scared to let their unfettered racism show. So that's what I was referring to. It took a lot of harsh criticism, but I'm going to stand by it. I strongly believe this. I believe that we are dealing with, in the black community, particularly, we are dealing with a lot of self-hate issues. People think that there's something wrong with them being black at some level, and that manifests in many various ways. And then also, other people look at us dealing with the problems that we have, and then they make judgments about us. And that affects us, and that's just one of the factors that go into this public health issue of crime in our communities. There's several other factors that play into it as well. We don't generally have control over the education system, and as is, the education system is not structured in a way where it's highly beneficial to non-white children. And, you know, that's something that's going to have to be addressed from the top down, but we can't start locally with our school board elections and putting people who are cognizant of that issue into office. And then also, just when I was doing my research, another thing I discovered that was a huge problem in African-American communities was social apathy. Just this idea that there's nothing that could be done. A lot of people just say, you know, no one's listening. My community members don't really care, so why should I care? Or I'm just too busy. I have to work. I can only care about my immediate family and my mama. I can't care about everybody else's family. So that social isolation and social apathy leads to a situation where we are not in a position to solve the problems we're facing. The only thing that gets us going is a quick response, like a person gets shot by the police. Some people will want to get out and protest for a few weeks, but eventually you got to go back to class. Your favorite sport starts back, or your favorite TV show starts back, or your new game comes out, and then we forget, and we go on with our lives until the next situation. So we got to find a way to change that right there.
Yeah, and I agree with you.
Our action?
What was that?
I was saying we got to find a way to make sustainable action plans so we could keep this going over time to make the changes we want.
I agree. And to go back to when you said people think something is wrong with being black, I think that's also an issue within our race. I feel like we do have a lot of that division when it comes to, your skin's darker. So, like, so growing up in school, because I have the darker skin, some girls would, you know, be a lot meaner and be a lot ruder, because black, I feel like, is always associated with negativity. Like, even with almost everything, like when it's dark, it's bad. When something's black, it's bad. When even in Star Wars, for example, Darth Vader, he's wearing black, he's a bad person. And then when someone's wearing white, they're seen as someone, you know, they're good because they're wearing white. And I was seeing a video, and then it was speaking on how
when you were saying the education system is not lean towards kids of other races besides white, I agree with you because the man in the video was saying before kids are even in school, they have this perception that being white is good, so it's better. So when before you even step into school, you expect your principal and your teachers to be white because you think, oh, white is what's good. And, you know, it's always a black versus white issue. And even within the race, we make it a light skin versus dark skin issue. And I feel like once we fix that, we can't tell the white race, well, the other races, how to treat us because we're not even doing it ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Very, very true. Now, there's some truth to that, but this is where we have to be creative, right? We who know better and who have moved away from that or who never experienced that orientation of it's something wrong with us being black, we have to do two things. We have to educate our own people about this self-inferiority complex that we're dealing with, and then also at the same time, we have to educate other communities. We have to let them know that it will not be tolerated and it will not be accepted. We are just as good and equal to anyone else in the world. And that we have to do both. So I don't want to make it seem as if I'm saying that line that, you know, it's okay for people to mistreat us because some black people mistreat themselves. That is never okay. Yeah. Mistreating anyone is not okay, and there's no justification for it. Even if someone doesn't respect themselves, you as a person who wants to be considered a good person, it would behoove you to respect that person. But that doesn't, on the flip side of that coin, improving our respect for each other is very important.
And I agree. And that reminds me of a few weeks ago when I had the an interview with Ms. Kiara Nixon, who is a U.S. ambassador pageant contestant, and we were speaking about the rape culture and how sometimes when a girl is wearing shorts or a skirt, guys seem to not have the same amount of respect for her as if she were wearing, you know, slacks in a business suit. So that's one of the things that I completely agree with you with. Like, even if someone doesn't, you know, seem to have represent themselves in that manner, doesn't mean you disrespect them. I agree. Mm-hmm. And if any of the callers on the line would like to comment on anything that they feel that is relevant to this topic, the floor is open. Hello? Okay.
Hello, this is William.
Hello?
Yes.
I kind of want to have something to say on that when you were saying it's the people thing and how we treat ourselves, and when you were saying that I'm too busy, you know, I got to work for my family, I'm too busy focusing on my family, can't really care about everyone else. I think it's really the whole thing with especially with politics is that if you don't change the hearts of people, you really can't get nowhere. You can make all the laws and the bills and propositions all you want, but if you don't change the hearts of the people, then you really won't really see any results that you're expecting to see.
I respect that opinion. I do think, you know, for example, sometimes policy changes will lead to people changing their positions, but it won't be complete. So I definitely agree with you. But, you know, sometimes we got to change the policy, and sometimes we got to reach people, like you said, reach their heart. So I think it's a mixture of both. But I definitely understand what you're saying, sir.
Mm-hmm.
I completely agree. I feel like when a policy is enforced, that would make someone, like, realize that something's wrong. I think that the heart change comes after that.
Fair enough.
I agree.
Okay.
Well, to go back to Dr. Strobel, I know you have a lot of human rights experience and a lot of experience with speaking with people and social science experience, and I know with that you had to speak with a lot of people along the way, so I wanted to ask and advice that gives me
and especially about, you know, speaking up what you firmly believe in and standing by it.
Okay. I didn't hear your entire question. It was breaking up.
Okay, I was saying with your experience with people and speaking with people and being a human rights activist and being a social science researcher, what lessons and advice would you give students and teens about speaking up and standing by what you believe?
I think one thing is you have to do your research. You want to know the most about what you're talking about. You want to know every detail you can find before you speak on something, because what you don't want to do is embarrass yourself by being wrong. But then at the same time, very important that you are passionate and that you're coming from the heart, because that's where people are going to recognize your authenticity. So I work with an organization called the Moving Forward Network. I'm on their advisory board. And what we were fighting against was the way that goods are moved through our society. A lot of times what you find is that, and we don't have this problem so much here in Tallahassee, but it's a nationwide problem for a lot of communities of color, is that pollution ends up in African-American communities, like the whole situation we saw with African-Americans and Latinos face the bare brunt of community issues. Of pollution and environmental injustice issues. So I have been going to several conferences. I've been going to several meetings over the past few years. I just get to meet with different activists from different communities. And one thing I see for the people who are successful is a certain fearlessness and a certain commitment to knowing their issue. So that's what I would say, is you should know your issue better than anybody, so that when you speak on it, people respect you as the expert.
Okay, hello?
I'm here.
Dr. Struggle, is there anyone?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Speaking on the line? Yes, I hear you. I think there was someone speaking on the line. No? Okay. and I think that's great advice, because I've seen it's like being loud and wrong. You know, it's just, I think that's great advice about being informed and being passionate, because you can tell when someone doesn't really care about what they speak about, and, you know, they're just doing it, and it doesn't get the same impact.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know you spoke about the Moving Forward Network, where you spoke about some pollution issues that you see in other places, but not so much Tallahassee, but other African-American communities. But what are some changes you would like to see in Tallahassee in the future?
Definitely, I think that we need to address this underdevelopment on the south side. You know, if you drive down Monroe, you drive down Adams in certain areas, we just have all those buildings there, and it's like, what's going on here? Why are these buildings empty? Why are there no businesses here? Where's the bank? Where's the grocery store? And I know they did bring in the Piggly Wiggly, but it looks like a completely different community. You can literally tell that you've driven to a part of the community that people do not care about as much as the other side. And I just don't think that's fair, because the children grow up in these communities, and they develop that orientation we were just talking about later, that I'm worth less and that people don't care about me. So I think that contributes to that public health crime issue. I think that contributes to people feeling that apathy. So if we're going to fight that, we have to make sure that we're giving all our people the same opportunity, and that starts with making sure that our communities are all equitably developed. We put what needs to be done where it needs to be done at.
And I agree with you, because I believe that the environment that that you're put in contributes to who you're going to become. And because I remember one time I was speaking with Dr. Young, who's a professor at FAMU, and he was speaking about when he was interning as a teacher, and he was on the
on the bad side of town in Dallas, I believe, and he was saying how those students didn't even have homework when they went home because it was one textbook for four students to share.
Right.
And then I was, and then if you compare that to the students that's on the other side of town that can, you know, take things like iPads home, and then at the end of the school year, we all get the same test. No matter if you were one of the students that had an iPad to take home or barely had a book, we all get the same test at the end of the school year. And of course, the student that didn't get as much preparation is not is probably not going to do as well as the other student who did. So I completely agree with the unequal development and making that a bigger issue so that it can be solved.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, so, and I also wanted to speak about how you got to this point in your career when, like, what brought you to the decision that you wanted to run, that you wanted to be a candidate for city commissioner?
Well, I have a local organization, Citizens for a Sustainable Future. It's a think tank, and a lot of times me and some of my colleagues, we sit around and we did research and we looked at the best ways to affect change in our local community. And then also when I was doing my dissertation, I was doing a lot of research on the community and ways that we can make, ways that things could be made better, what type of programs would be needed, and what the people were saying that they needed. And if my first goal was to get one of my close friends to run for office, and they all declined. So it kind of left it with, you know, somebody has to do it, and I know the issues. I'm connected with the people, so I said, you know, I'm a person who could get this done. It's a huge time commitment. There's not a lot of there's not money in it. You know, you get enough money to pay for your campaign. So it's just a commitment to actually serving the people. And I was just like, well, you know, my children live in this community. Me and my wife are here, so I got to do my best to make the community a better place.
And I agree with that because one of my favorite quotes is it says, "If you want to see a change in the system, then you become the system." And then it was going on about how you become the police officer, you become that judge, the that you, if you want to see the change, then you have to actually do something versus, you know, just sitting there and talking about it. So I applaud you for taking that step.
Thank you.
And once commissioner, what are some of your plans for improving the situations that we've spoken about?
Okay, well, as one thing I would like to see as commissioner is just using the commission to incentivize development into the areas where it's needed most without gentrifying the communities at the same time. So what we want to do is we want to try to entice business owners and developers to come into certain areas where they wouldn't have looked before, and that's by making them more appealing. And you do that through what they call impact fees, right? So if a developer wants to come in and develop in a specific area, then the impact fees are there and they would have to pay them. And if they pay the impact fees, that money could be used to also do developments in other areas. Now, at the same time, if they don't want to pay those fees, then we could offer them really good locations in our underdeveloped areas along with fee waivers, permit expeditions, and that would really encourage development on the south side and other parts of town where we have those empty buildings that need to be, and we have that construction that needs to be done. So that's called blight. We just have those buildings that are a sore spot to look at in the community. We could start to eliminate some of the blight on the south side and in Frenchtown. I think that would be an amazing first step and something I would like to accomplish. Aside from that, I would like to offer more support for transparency and ethics in the city of Tallahassee. I think that's another issue. Mm-hmm. People don't trust the government often because they don't know what's going on. We do have an ethics commission that was started by the Citizens for Ethical Government, I believe is the name of the organization. They did a referendum, and they got a vote in 2014, and we established it. And I really like what that committee was established to do is to provide oversight on the city commission and other public officials who work for the city to make sure that they're not abusing their power or behaving unethically. And I would like to see that committee stay independent and be empowered to hold people accountable. As far as police brutality is concerned, I also support the establishment of a civilian review board that could provide oversight for officers accused of misconduct. A lot of times we know that these things are done in-house and we never get any consequences for officers who mistreat civilians. And also because of that, civilians are scared to come forward when they're done or when they're mistreated by an officer. So we need to eradicate that situation, and I think a civilian review board is the best way to do so. And then also policy idea that I'm really working on is currently the Chamber of Commerce in Tallahassee wants to get rid of the business tax. The business tax is basically a series of fees that you would pay to start a business here in Tallahassee. Well, that tax would go to about $8 to $9 million a year, and that money is used to do streets and sidewalks and things of that nature. I do not support eradicating the business tax. Instead, what I would like to see is an exemption program, and companies could be exempted if they made certain agreements. One would be if they agreed to pay living wages to their employees, meaning that the employees are all paid not just minimum wage, but a living wage, which would be required here in the state of Tallahassee to have the basic means to pay your bills and not just live in consistent poverty. Also, environmental stewardship agreements that they can make with the city, which would be to not use plastic bags, to encourage carpooling, to use energy-efficient materials and so forth. That's the way we can protect the environment and allow businesses to build more sustainable infrastructures without having to pay the business tax. And then also a targeted hiring program. We have really high unemployment on certain parts of town, particularly in South City and in Frenchtown. And I think if we could focus hiring from those areas or also offer internships to our college students, paid internships, that would be another way that a company could be exempt from the business tax. So that's just another idea I've been promoting, a way to get our economy going and spur some economic development. You could imagine some people are pretty scared of that idea because it means that they won't get to put all the money in their pockets, or they might have to pay a fair wage to someone or not pollute the environment. And some people don't like that idea, but a lot of people, it resonates with them, and they're supporting me.
I think they're good ideas. And one idea that stuck out with me that you said was that people don't trust the government because they don't know what's going on in the whole misconduct of officers, and they choose not to go on to them. Like recently this past week, one of my friends was saying they actually got their car broken into, but they were like, I'm not going to call the police because they're not going to do anything. You know, like I feel like now there's a fear being built on who we expect to, you know, protect us. And so I agree with the ethics on board, and I think the business tax, what you're trying to do, is a good idea also, because that will because there's a lot of people that come out of college and they're like, oh, well, there's no jobs for me. But now, because most people are not interested in internships, but now that there might be more paid internships out there, that might give a little bit of more motivation to seniors in college and college students of that nature.
Yes.
And if there's anyone on the line that would like to ask Dr. Strobel any questions, the floor is open for any comments from throughout the interview. Hello, I don't think they have any questions. Okay, hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, so, and I also, okay, so would Citizens for a Sustainable Future be a part of the, be a part of your campaign as under the umbrella? Can we speak about the Citizens for Sustainable Future?
No, it won't be a part of my campaign because it's a nonprofit organization, so it's not ethical for a nonprofit organization to involve itself in political matters in that way. So really, that's just an organization. We do charity work, we do workshops, and we do research to provide information to people in the community. And that's as far as Citizens for a Sustainable Future goes. We do work on this initiative called Tallahassee Community Healing Days. We work with the association, with the Association of Black Psychologists. And I'm sorry, we work with the Association of Black Psychologists and with this initiative called Tallahassee Community Healing Days. And the goal is to address that issue that a lot of African American people feel about their self-worth and their value and about dealing with internal inferiority in those complexes. And we develop programs and just self-help or self-mental help just to help yourself feel better and improve your quality of life. So that's one thing that we've been working on consistently, and it won't be a major part of my campaign.
Okay, and I agree with that concept because I was when watching one of the videos that I was speaking about earlier, they made a hypothetical country called Richland, and it had a lot of psychological research to it because it had the hierarchy of needs. It said in Richland, students, so that basically everyone in the land was rich because they followed these few steps. It said in Richland, students would get good grades not only because they felt good, but only because that's how they felt acceptance from their parents. And then the concept was the only way to feel good about yourself is to be successful and to be liked. And so it just picked at people's, on the hierarchy of needs, it picked at what people's need, like the sense of wanting to belong, the sense of wanting to be accepted. They were picking at that so you can want to become rich. So that's how they were basically saying how everyone in the country can be rich. And it was, and then honestly looking at it, I was like, if that's what being rich takes, I don't want it. So working with the, having everyone feel good about their self-esteem first, I feel like is a solid foundation for building a culture.
Just say that question again.
And I was just stating how psychologically the self-esteem contributes to everything else that has to do with everything.
Okay. Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Strobel, for being on the show today.
All right, thank you very much for having me. I'm sorry the connection was getting kind of at the end. I couldn't hear everything you were saying, but I definitely was happy to be here. And whenever you want to have me on again, just let me know.
No problem. Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening in and being on the show.
All right.
Okay, always remember that you will become successful, you are intelligent, and you will rise above. Thank you for listening to Plugged In with Chelsea Franco.